Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
All right, so some questions coming in as to maybe a different direction the Nuggets could go in terms of free agency. And by the way, I love what Tim Connelly said yesterday, sort of laying down the gauntlet to NBA big-time free agents out there, saying now nobody, no free agent can come out and say at the beginning of the free agency process, I'm looking to go to a place where I can win and not entertain us. Because if you say you're all about winning and you don't come and talk to us and hear what we have to say, then you're being disingenuous.
No, not really.
You're lying about what you're all about. Well, of course you are.
No, you're not, because you want to win, but it all boils down to fit. Just because you have a top player that's out there and he's looking to get a max deal and you need a top player, he may not fit into what you do on either side of the ball, defensive offense. So why try to bring that guy into the fold and force him because he's a big name?
About fit. No, I'm talking about once you have, as a team, have decided that this is a big-time free agent that you want to target because you think he'd be a good fit, you know darn well that that big-time free agent is going to be out there telling everybody, I want to go to a place where I can win. So if the Nuggets are calling you and they're expressing interest in you, and you've come out and said that you want to make sure you go to a place where you can win, and you turn down the chance to visit with the Nuggets, then don't tell me you're about trying to win. Then you're lying.
No, you want to win, but then there's some other dynamics that play a role.
Such as?
If I were to come in, I'm a big time player. You have a young team. You have Jokic. You have Jamal Murray. Some guys are concerned with, who's going to be the leader on the team? Am I going to be the face of the team? Or we're talking about these other guys? And, you know, how many touches am I going to get a night? That's important to players, and that is a determining factor.
I don't think it's that important for these guys that go out and try to form these super teams.
Hey, it's a little different.
I don't think they're as worried about fit and touches and roles. They just want to go form their super team.
But see, it all depends on
go form it here.
Who you're forming that team with. You look at what happened with the Miami Heat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had a lot of guys deferring to LeBron James because they wanted to win a title, right? Chris Bosh did that. He gave up time. He gave up points for LeBron because he wanted a championship. So now, yes, if you're one of those guys and you want to win a championship, you're in your last leg and you're at the tail end of your career, yes, maybe you might be willing to come here and conform and give, you know, more minutes and more touches to Jokic and Murray just so you win your title. But it all depends on where you are in your career.
But I've seen plenty of guys who still in the prime of their career take lesser, reduced roles for the chance to be able to win. Dwayne Wade, as they were forming this super team in Miami, he knew that he'd be impacted by what was happening. Paul Pierce all of a sudden had Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. He knew that would change his role. He was fine with that. So, again, it comes back to the idea that if you are serious about winning, then why wouldn't you be willing to take a lesser role, not have to be the man, and come play with Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray?
Well, once again,
it still comes back to the idea, Nick, of if you are serious about winning and you don't want to take the Nuggets call, then you're lying.
You're lying.
You're lying. All right, I'll soften it with a different word. Then you're being I'll use the word that Tim Connelly used. Okay, it's not as harsh. It doesn't sound as harsh. Lying, but you are being disingenuous.
Okay, I'll toss this at you. So if you were to take the call, what does that mean? Because at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is that you put your John Hancock on a piece of paper. I can take the call from the Nuggets, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm buying or looking at them as a real contender for landing my talents. I could just take the call just to bump up the offer from someone else. I mean, I believe didn't Dwayne Wade do that?
Yes, right? He did. He used the Nuggets, yes.
That's right. So he wasn't really looking at the Nuggets as a legitimate team.
But at that point, at that point, a couple of years ago, they were a team that you used. But are they at that point now? I don't think they are.
I mean, on the surface, it may not appear based on how the core group of guys have been put together and how they play, but you still can use it because it's all about leverage. Here's a young team that was right on the precipice of being in a Western Conference championship, right? But they lost to a Portland Trailblazers team, and I'm just going to use them as leverage to increase, you know, my max dollars, right? Because the idea is, here's a young team. If I join them, they're that much better. But if I join another team somewhere else, I'm even better off, just like you talked about.
Well, and if all this person is trying to do is just maximize the amount of money he makes and go to a situation where he's going to be the man, even if he's not guaranteed to be able to compete for a championship, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I mean, it's free agency. You can do whatever you want. But what I'm saying is, don't get up at the beginning of this process and say, winning is important to me, and then go out and go somewhere where you are sending a clear message that it's not, that it's about getting paid and it's about being the man. If that's what you want, fine, but don't lie to us and say that I want to go to a place where I want to win. Because if you want to go to a place where you can win, then to me that implies that, yeah, I want to get paid, don't get me wrong, but I want to be part of a winning environment, and that means I'm willing to sacrifice parts of my game to be part of a winning situation. And if the Nuggets are interested in you, and you decide you're not interested in them, then that tells me that you're not willing to do those kind of things. Well, and if you're not willing to do those kind of things, then good riddance to you.
Well, if you are a free agent coming out this summer, the Nuggets will be on your list. Now, deciding where they are on your list, that's the thing, and it's different for each player.
Yes, and it also depends on the other teams that are interested in you. I mean, if there are some other teams interested in you that you can look at honestly, and we can all agree, yeah, he'd be joining the winning situation there, and he'd be getting paid, you know, and he'd be getting the chance to be the man, then I can't have a problem with him if he decides to go there. I'm just saying that if he ends up saying no to the Nuggets, but ends up going somewhere where clearly
like the
it's
Wizards?
Not all about trying to win,
like the Wizards,
then you're lying.
Of course, in that case, in that example, absolutely. But it boils down to that player, where they are in their career. If you're talking about a young player, rising star, or we're talking about a veteran who is in the twilight years of his career, and he thinks that, hey, listen, I can fit in well with this young team. I'll take a reduced role, take less, you know, production, and I'll be willing to come off the bench. Then you have something there. So it is legitimate to look at the Nuggets, but you really don't know what's in the back of the minds of these players as far as where they want to play. I mean, are we talking about in the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference? And if you're a free agent and it's like, I have to choose between the Clippers, who are in the West, or another team that's in the East, like the Pacers, then, you know, the Pacers are a young team within themselves. No Victor Oladipo, still got to the playoffs. They got swept. They were swept. But still, now I have to weigh my options. Is it better in Denver or in Indy?
Well, you're also kind of dancing around something else, too, is that where is the place where I want to go where I can get paid, play, put up numbers, but also have fun, you know, build my brand? Is Denver one of those places? I mean, let's not be naive. There's a reason why there's a perception that so many of these super teams, when they're formed, they're going to be formed in New York or L.A. I mean, you hear about it, okay? I mean, hey, is Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving going to team up in New York? Is Kawhi Leonard and, you know, fill in the blank going to join forces with the Clippers? Is Kyrie going to reunite with LeBron in L.A.? I mean, nobody's saying, hey, I want to go join the Greek Freak in Milwaukee.
No one's
saying that.
They could say it now.
Maybe, but but are they going to say that about Denver? Now, move that on over to another team. I don't think the Avalanche faced nearly that kind of issue, because that just doesn't seem to be the way in hockey, where it's like, hey, let's go to this market to form this super team. top free agents have been willing to come to the Avalanche for years. So that's not an issue. And that's a team that right now I think is on the cusp of doing something special and being a big time player in free agency with a guy like Kevin Hayes or, Panarin out of Columbus, who's a guy I desperately want to see them go get. But again, it comes back to the idea as a fan base, you've been sold on the idea of the youth movement. And now that the youth movement is bearing some fruit, are you willing to deviate from that and now say, let's go big into free agency. Let's go after that guy. I mean, I was bringing up the idea of the Avalanche going big in free agency, and I legitimately had somebody try to make the argument to me is, whoa, you can't do that because if you end up doing that, you'll end up like the Chicago Blackhawks with a roster that is bloated with these huge contracts that leaves you no room to move. And I sat back, I responded to the guy, I go, wait a minute, whoa. They won three cups with that model.
Yeah.
You're telling me you would not want to go down that road and possibly win three cups because at the end of it, 7 years from now, you end up having a bunch of guys on your roster who are getting paid enormous money who are past their prime. Sign me up. I'll take that trade any day. You're telling me I'm going to pass on the possibility of winning three Stanley Cups and end up with bloated contracts just so at the end of the day, I don't win any cups, but I can say we're still being fiscally responsible. We have salary cap flexibility. Are you kidding me? See, go for it, man.
All of that depends on whether the team is in a win now type of mentality. With the Avs, it's a little different with the Avs and the Nuggets. I mean, because the Nuggets is now getting used to the national scene. The Avs have already been there. They've already won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, but it's a lifetime ago.
I mean, I know it's a lifetime ago, but...
On the NHL landscape, they have been irrelevant for a decade and a half. Man, that's a long time. And they finally are at a point where, I mean, they lose Game 7 to San Jose, and I'm watching our NHL playoff insider Barry Melrose on ESPN, and he is gushing about the Avs, saying this is the team that is poised to be the next power in the Western Conference. Man, if ever there is a time to strike while the iron's hot, it is now. And you can do so in a way in which you don't. Yeah, I'm not talking about signing, 34-year-old Theo Fleury or some of the other older free agents that they brought, Jerome Ginla. I'm talking about bringing in guys who are, still in their 20s and are studs. That's what I'm talking about. So what I'm saying is I think that we've seen teams that have gone down this youth movement before who have fallen in love with the movement, overrated their prospects, clutch their prospects to their chest like they're gold and we can't give them up, and they've missed out on an opportunity. I think the Rockies did that a couple times with some of these ill-fated youth movements. I think in the case of the Nuggets and the Avs, they both look like they're onto something. And my point is, why wait? You got some positive momentum. Strike on it.
Now the question
I will ask you is it time for the Broncos to adopt more of a long-term plan? Step back from that, we've got to try to win every single year and all the moves that we make are based with the idea that we're trying to win this year, or do they need to do a smarter thing, step back, and try to play more of the long view? Play younger.
You don't have to do that. And I don't condone or... I'm not in favor of that whole youth movement because on the surface it sounds great, but what you end up doing is you cripple your team because each year you're trying to do the same thing with the youth movement. If you know that you have a couple of pieces in place, you go out there and you try to bring in some veterans that can actually help you, right? And it sounds like what I'm presenting is, oh, well, we're in a win now mentality. No. You have to have the ability to manage both of those strategies. And if you're the Broncos, I mean, you definitely take a step back. You don't change your mentality as far as wanting to win every season. And the Super Bowl should be the goal. But don't have it be Super Bowl or bust so much that you hamstring the team in your decision-making process. And you make poor decisions. It's bad evaluating because you're trying to make something happen now. And in sports, we talk about it all the time. It's pressing. Don't press. Understand your roster. Understand where you are as a team, and you try to add those pieces to make your team competitive, especially within your division. But if it's at the forefront of your mind every single time, we have to swing for the fences, you know, a la, you know, baseball. Don't do that because that's going to get you in trouble. And using, you know, more baseball terminology, hey, let's get guys on base and move them around. So with football, you do the same thing. Let's put some guys in place. Yeah, you know, it may be 8-8, 9-7 season, but we're moving forward to a point to where we can get to, because what we know in sports, the teams that are at the top, at some point, they're going to falter and they're going to start to fold. So you're going to get there. You just win enough games throughout a given season to just say, you know what, we're making strides and we're making improvements. We're going to get to where we need to get to in the end, but if by making poor decisions, you never get to that point. You never.
Are the Broncos quietly embracing a youth movement? Are they rebuilding behind our very backs without talking about, like, I'm looking at their roster right now, and I'm just looking at years of experience in the league. And you start going down. Yeah, certainly Flacco jumps out. It's his 12th year. But you start looking. Drew Locke, rookie. Devontae Booker, fourth year. Royce Freeman, second year. Philip Lindsay, second year. Andy Janovich, fourth year. I'm going down the list of guys that, you know, figure to be, you know, prominent role guys. Tim Patrick, second year. Cortland Sutton, second year. Jake Butt, second year. Noah Fant, rookie. Keep going. Got along the offensive line, guys like Connor McGovern, fourth year. Garrett Bowles, third year. Reisner, rookie. Even on the defense, where we see more recognizable names, guys that have been around a while. Shelby Harris, only in his fifth year. Adam Gotsis, fourth year. Zach Kerr, sixth year. You know, Bradley Chubb, second year. Todd Davis, sixth year. What I'm saying is, Josie Jewell, second year. What I'm saying is that as much as we look at the Broncos as they are in urgent win-now mode, are they quietly rebuilding while trying to do all that?
They certainly
have never come out and admitted that they're in the middle of a youth movement, but are they?
But see, you used the wrong word that any fan base wants to hear, and that's rebuilding. The way that the Broncos are looking at this, they're using the word retooling.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to retool our roster. We realize that we are very inexperienced in certain spots, so we're trying to add some veteran leadership and some depth. But this whole youth movement has been a problem in sports for a while, because you think that, hey, listen, I don't want to pay a veteran a certain amount of money. I can go out and pay a guy less money. Listen, I've been in a situation myself in my career when I left the Jets to come to Denver. The idea with, you know, Mike Tannenbaum at that time was that, hey, listen, we can get two players for the salary that we're paying you, but that doesn't necessarily equate to production on the field. It doesn't. That philosophy, where it might sound great sitting in a room with the GM, but looking at the, you know, wins and losses, it doesn't equate. But this is a very young team, and it doesn't have a lot of veteran leadership. It's not like, I hate to say this, but I have to use this as the best example of the Patriots. The Patriots have done an excellent job of managing the both of these strategies of having the young guys and the veterans, because we see veteran cast-off. We were talking about Gerald McCoy earlier, that, you know, he could end up going to New England, because they do a great job of telling guys, hey, listen, we win championships here. You come, you adapt to our way of life, our philosophy, the Patriot way, as they call it. Then you, we put you in the mix. You have an opportunity. This is something that more teams, being as though this is a copycat league, I don't see more teams doing this, adopting this philosophy. It's either we're going all in on the veteran guys trying to win now, or we're going to use movement because we can now say that we have we have more money in the salary cap to keep continue to sign young players. You have to mesh the two systems.
I don't care what the Broncos are telling us publicly. I get it. You're not going to come out publicly and say we're rebuilding. You don't want to do that. You got passionate fans here who are used to winning, and you're trying to, you know, get people to continue to invest in your team, stay engaged with your team. How do you do that if you basically come out and put a sign up in the window that says, you know, sorry, gone fishing. You know, we're rebuilding. Check back with us under construction. You know, we'll check back with you in a couple of years. But I don't care what they say to us publicly. What I want to know is what's being said privately. They get together in some conference room and they're all sitting around a table and they're like, all right, let's hash out things right now, folks. What are we? Who are we? What direction are we going in?
I'm not sure.
And do you see a scenario in which the powers that be that are sitting around that conference table saying, hey, look, you know, we're going to continue to tell people that we're all about trying to win, and we are still trying to win. But make no mistake, we recognize that we're a team that has to get younger, and we have to rebuild the next core of the next great Bronco team.
That's true.
And are they doing that even though they haven't come out and really admitted that?
Yes, they are. And to throw fans off the scent, that's why you bring in a guy like Joe Flacco. Because now you can say that you have a veteran quarterback and you have an opportunity to win games. How many games, we still don't know yet, because we don't know what this offense is going to look like. But to roll Joe Flacco out there, that way you're still showing your fan base, we are committed to winning. We want to be competitive in 2019 season. But looking at our overall roster and the age of our roster, we're in the youth movement.
But you can think that you're in a youth movement, but does the youth movement pledge extend to the quarterback position? Because if you and I both think that they're having those conversations privately,
yes,
where they're saying, hey, we're trying to win, but let's be honest, we've got to rebuild. We've got to get younger. Why then didn't they draft a quarterback last year?
Well, the reason they didn't draft a quarterback, you know, last year, because they felt as though there were other positions of need. They felt as though they got a reliable guy in Case Keenum.
Keenum. There's the interception.
And reliable being the word that you want to use in this situation, because they were looking at Keenum as being the bridge guy to getting them to where they are now, because there were no adequate veteran, you know, quarterbacks out there but Keenum. So, and then if you draft a young quarterback in the first round, you're definitely telling everyone right away that, hey, listen,
right,
we're in this youth movement.
Step
right
back.
Now.
Okay, listen, Bronco fan, you're free to disengage from us for a couple years, because we're sending a very clear message that we're going young and rebuilding. Take a quarterback.
That's the reason Drew Lock was taken in the second round instead of the first.
So you sort of throw people off the scent of your ongoing youth movement by staying veteran at the quarterback position.
Absolutely. That's the one position you definitely want to stay veteran at, the quarterback position.
Okay. See the sleight of hand going on? Oh.
David Blaine.
Wow. So, all right, then that begs the next question we'll get to coming up then. As a Bronco fan, are you a little bit annoyed by that? That they're... Broncos are sort of playing fast and loose with you. That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Mark off today. He'll be back tomorrow. Nick Ferguson been doing a great job sitting in. NFL owners meetings are wrapping up, and some announcements expected to come out of those meetings, including the likelihood that Cleveland could be getting the draft in 2021. It'll be Vegas next year. Perhaps Cleveland 2021. We'll have to get, we'll get to Cecil Lammy's comments earlier today to us about why he does not believe that Denver will be getting the NFL draft anytime soon. We'll get to that in just a second. But some other stuff I want to get to. Apparently there's some, in the interest of player safety, you know, the league is always about trying to show that they care about their players, and it's all about player safety.
Absolutely.
So the league, Nick, has also made player safety recommendations to teams about drills that should no longer be used in training camp. The banned drills include Oklahoma, bull in the ring, / king of the circle, half line, / three spot, / pods. The hope is this will drive down concussion numbers in camp. We're out of camp every single day. All you fans out there are out of camp. Are these drills still happening?
I don't see, these drills are not occurring. I mean, who is the 1970 coach still living back in the dark ages with these drills? No one's doing these drills anymore. I mean, I've coached in the CFL and I coached with the 49ers. Never once did I see any of these drills. Now, did I go through these drills in college and high school? Yes.
They're still used in high school, I know for sure.
In certain circles. Certain circles. Coaches have that same old school mentality, but you don't see the utilization of these type of drills in today's NFL, especially knowing the information that we now have about concussions and seeing how the collective bargaining agreement was changed, I believe, in 2014. So we're not really seeing this anymore. Practices, let's be totally honest, they are not as long, and this is going to sound like, hey, here is the veteran guy talking about, hey, back in my day, but practices now, it's so cupcake, it's not even funny. It's not even practice anymore. I mean, even two-a-day practice, one is in full pads, the other's in shorts. And then there's a walkthrough. That's not even practice. So, I mean, here it is. I'm sorry. I'm going to be the veteran guy. And maybe I'm being, you know, hey, get off my lawn. But, man, these guys are soft now.
All right. Well, speaking to the idea of soft, physically soft, how about mentally soft? The NFL and NFLPA has agreed, as part of a comprehensive mental health and wellness committee, that each team is going to have what's called a behavioral health team clinician focused on supporting players' emotional and mental health and well-being. The team clinician is required to be available to players at the team facility for at least 8 to 12 hours per week. For those of you who watch the show Billions, which now with Game of Thrones no longer on, I believe is the best show on television. They have, basically you're talking about each team having their own Wendy Rhodes. For those of you who watch the show know exactly what I'm talking about. Is to have basically a mental coach available at all hours of the day while everybody's working to be able to go in there and vent and express their frustrations and fears and all that. Think that works in the NFL?
No, it doesn't.
I want you to go on, but I just can't imagine an NFL player looking around, you know, there's the office, there's the door, and, you know, looking around to make sure nobody's walking in. Because if anybody sees you walking in to visit with the mental health coach, what are people going to start thinking and talking about you about?
See, first of all, I mean, you lost me when you used the fancy name team clinician, right?
Clinician.
It's behavioral. Yes. I mean, it's like, well, what does that really mean?
It's, and you're absolutely the right.
Okay. And you're absolutely right. If a player is constantly going or seen going into that office, management is going to start to have their own perceptions about that particular player. as far as this kind of the mental fortitude of that player, especially knowing the NFL being more mental than physical. Does this player have the capability to process and diagnose the information that we're giving him in the classroom to go out there on the field? And if that player is constantly making errors on the field and he's constantly in the clinician's office, that's a red flag. That is going to affect how the organization as a whole views that player. So it sounds great on the surface. Like, you know, we are handling the issues that our players are dealing with both on and off the field. But at the same time, this can be a huge indictment on those particular players who are constantly in that office.
Well, it's like the idea of self-reporting concussions. What player is going to do that? Unless he's Ben Roethlisberger. What person's going to come forward and say, yeah, I think I got a concussion?
No one.
Tom Brady, of all people who would have the juice to be able to do it, he has said, I don't want anybody to know.
I love Tom Brady.
Took his wife to come out and say, yeah, I think he's had concussions. And
Mike, the reason...
He didn't like that.
The reason why is because ever since we were small, we were taught to be a certain way as players, as men. But also looking from the business side of it, you know, reporting, and listen, I'm not advocating for any guy to not report that he was concussed. But let's really look at it the way it is. This is still a business. And if you're a player that have constantly had a lot of concussions, I mean, you become damaged goods at that point, right? So that's why Tom Brady might not have mentioned it. That's why other guys might not have made it known. So asking a guy who's having some issues, you know, on the field as far as diagnosing plays or issues at home, to expect him to go into an office with someone and divulge those type of things, that may not happen.
But, Nick, don't we have to get by that macho type attitude? And why can't we realize that, yeah, these guys are pro football players. They do things on a Sunday afternoon, a Sunday night that we can't even imagine. But they are still real people dealing with real issues, and should it be considered that much of a sign of weakness if, you know, they want to go talk to somebody about something?
But you're still talking about the macho bravado that's associated with the game, but also the negative, the downside by individuals seeing me in that room constantly, thinking that, you know, maybe I don't have what it takes to be a player because mentally I've checked out or I'm weak mentally. So, I mean, it's great in theory, but practicality is like, I don't know.
Austin just texted in. He says, if therapy is an embarrassment or a red flag for a player, then the culture of the NFL is poisonous. Do you agree with that?
I don't want to say that it's poisonous, but you have to understand that the NFL is a business. Every player wants to play. You love the game. Guys like having the ability to take care of their families. But at the same time, we know certain things you do and you say could affect that way of life and how you are paid and how you're viewed. I'm not saying that I like it, but, I mean, it is what it is.
We've got some fresh news to pass along on Chris Harris's contract. That's coming up next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Per our buddy Mike Cliff, just tweeted this out. John Elway and Fred Lyles, Chris Harris's agent, have had multiple discussions in recent days. Both sides have moved. Talks are focused on an adjustment to Harris's 2019 payout. Progress, but still no agreement. You and I were talking about this during the break. You can dress this up any way you want. This still feels like basically a franchise tag type situation, which every player, current and ex, that I've talked to doesn't like the franchise tag. But isn't this in effect what Chris Harris would be agreeing to? A bumped up salary for 2019, but then right back into a situation with no contract and nothing guaranteed long term and a year older.
It's all about the perception. the perception is that we are doing our best to keep one of our key players in the fold. But at the same time, it's how can we protect ourselves? And you're absolutely right. This is a franchise tag in essence. We're going to pay you the top amount for the guy at your position. And there's no long-term guarantees. And you're absolutely right. As players, you hate that. To the common man, that sounds great, right? If you're making $50,000, $250,000, this is great to have a bump in pay getting $15 to $17 million in one fiscal year. But what about the long-term guarantees? There are no long-term guarantees for Chris Harris in 2020. You hit the open market. But what does that mean for Chris Harris? I mean, on the surface, it might sound great because you're getting a significant amount of money up front. But how does that affect you? Because now you're a year older. Teams take that into consideration. Why would we pay a corner, you know, who's in his 30s, a significant amount of money when we can go out and get a younger player, two players, pay him less money, and develop them? And the idea is maybe we get more production.
See, I think this would be a great move for the Broncos. I don't think it's a great move for Chris Harris, but I think it'd be a great move for the Broncos because it fits again with what we were talking about earlier, Nick, that this is a team that quietly, without coming out and admitting it, is rebuilding on the fly. And boy, does this kind of move fit that perfectly. You got Chris Harris for one more year, which maximizes the chance you have of trying to be competitive this year, but by no means puts you in any kind of restrictive contract that keeps you from your long-term mission of trying to get younger and build your next great core.
Well,
win-win on both situations, right?
Not necessarily.
If you're the Broncos.
Well, for the Broncos,
yes,
it's definitely because we always talk about leverage in negotiations. Who has the leverage, and that person can dictate the pace of the negotiations and demand what they want. For the Broncos, it's just like, okay, Chris, we're willing to meet you halfway and give you the money that you want. We're going to make the fan base really happy. We're going to give Vangio another piece for his defensive puzzle to help out Joe Flacco and Rich Gangarello, right? We're going to try to make a run, but if things don't work out, hey, thank you, Chris, for everything that you've given to us. Now you go out in free agency in 2020. And then there's no guarantee in 2020 that Chris would be able to command top dollar. You hope you're able to do that based on your level of production in 2019, but there's no guarantee. And then the Broncos still can go out in 2020 and draft a young corner because they don't really have that. Kareem Jackson plays corner, but he's better at safety now than he was at corner in the past 4 years for the Texans. And Bryce Callahan, I mean, yes, he's familiar with Vangio, but let's not kid ourselves. He's an inside guy. He's not great playing outside the numbers. So, I mean, everything is in the Broncos' favor. I mean, you get everything you want.
Hey, if you got a guy that's into his 30s and you get a chance to go year to year with him, awesome. Fantastic. That's great. You know, year to year, if he performs, great.
If he doesn't, no long-term commitment.
Right. And if he goes out and has a great year this year, you know what you could do next year? Actually put the franchise tag on him. the real franchise tag. More coming out of the NFL owner meetings. We will likely get a word on where the 2021 NFL draft will be. 2020 for Vegas. Where will it be for 2021? The Broncos continue to let the league know that they're interested. But our Cecil Lammy, who was on with us earlier from 1043thefan.com, and who is a regular at all these drafts, and he's seen the growth of the draft and how it's become such a huge event, he is skeptical about the Broncos' chances of landing the draft.
I'm going to say something very painful and something that I, you know, would have fought tooth and nail against, but I don't know if Denver could pull it off. I really don't. What Nashville did, they had 600,000 people there over the course of 3 days. At the NFL draft, packed downtown. And like Denver, I know that Denver's trying to introduce Red Rocks into it. And wow, wouldn't that be cool? And yes, it would. God, I love Red Rock. But I don't think downtown you have that spot. the way that Nashville had, and it's a game changer. What Philadelphia did was a game changer. Jerry Jones at Dallas, that was a game changer. With the current structure of the stadium, you're not going to throw it there. Downtown's kind of across I-25. You're not going to throw it there. You can't do it at Red Rock. You have hundreds of thousands of people traveling to the draft now. The NFL has crushed it out of the park. I love Radio City Music Hall, and I miss going there to New York City, but my God, the NFL is crushing it now with the draft. And okay, Cleveland after Vegas, that's a little bit of a letdown, but whatever. But I just don't know where Denver would hold the draft now based on what the draft is.
My daughter went to a concert at Red Rocks on last Saturday.
Yes.
I mean, Red Rocks, it was a beautiful afternoon, and if you could tell me that the weather was going to be perfect, I mean, man, the whole Red Rocks area would be perfect. I mean, what a spectacle. I mean, you talk about made for television, and with the ratings that the draft just got, it clearly has become a made for television event. But look outside the last couple of days. You can't assume that you're going to get that kind of weather. And then all those, if you're trying to get 500,000, 600,000 people to come to your draft at Red Rocks, hey, anybody who's been to Red Rocks knows that's a physical challenge to get around that place, to get up to that place. And, I wonder, in the interest of comfort and accessibility and all that kind of stuff that the NFL would want, you got to be pretty hardy to take on the whole Red Rocks experience. And I'm sure that they would probably look at it and go, that's just a little too hardy for us.
Well, I'll tell you this. I totally disagree with Cecil's assessment. I mean, I've been to the NFL draft in Dallas. I've been to the Super Bowl. So I do know this, that the league does a great job of looking at these venues and these places that they consider in advance. And, as beautiful as Red Rocks is, there are other places that you can actually make this work. I mean, you have
600,000 people.
Well, you have first of all, you got to think about it. The draft itself is in one central location, and there's all these other things going on simultaneously that caters to the fans. So you can do this in the downtown.
You've been to downtown Denver lately?
But you can.
You tell me where there's room now to put an event outside that's going to draw that many
people. The
whole
thing is that you spread it out, because when you look at the Super Bowl and how the league has done that, and they've done a great job at it, I mean, you put certain fanfare events in one location, and then you do the draft in another. I mean, you have the Pepsi Center that you can use,
mm-hmm.
right? Then you have the Buell Theater, where you can actually use that if you want to house the draft itself.
But you've got to have an outside venue to be able to have all these people that want to be outside. I mean, Nashville was right along the river.
What about the Civic Center area? Why you can't use that? That's a grassy area, right? And then if the weather is somewhat of an issue, you can plan for that. Right, you can build those little plastic white tents that you see at these galas to be able to house all these people if inclement weather proves to be an issue. Right, so there's a lot of logistics that may go into this, but because the league does a great job of researching and hashing these problems out 2 to 3 years in advance, there's no reason that Denver can't host. We have a great airport, and it's a beautiful city. Clean air. There's a lot to do down in Lodo. So you can make it happen. There's abundance of hotels downtown. So to me, just to dismiss the city of Denver, to me, I just think that that's a disgrace.
Well, no, we could absolutely host these big time sporting events. We have the hotel rooms and everything to do that. But to Cecil's point, it has become such a spectacle, in many ways, an outdoor spectacle. That, yes, you have to have that place indoors to be able to hold the nuts and bolts, the guts of your draft, but you still have to have that outdoor area to be able to put on one of these giant fan fest type things. And to his point, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, I mean, he's actually seen these environments. He's questionable whether or not Denver can pull that off.
Listen, I was in Dallas for the draft, so I've been there too myself. And if the league can put on the Super Bowl in New York City, you can do that here in Denver. Because you already have a game plan to deal with the winter. It's no different.
Let me tell you, I was in New York City for that Super Bowl. Most of the times I was in New York City, and you never would have known a Super Bowl was happening in that city that week.
Really?
Yes.
Is that because everything's so spread out?
Yeah, and they just didn't embrace it. All right. That's a topic we can continue to hash out. Thank you so much again for filling in. You've been awesome.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
A lot of fun, a lot of good energy, a lot of good opinions back and forth. Really enjoyed it. Stank will be back tomorrow. The Safety Blitz with Nick Ferguson, but not with Nick. It'll be with John Davis and Orlando Franklin coming up next.